Yay!
Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Morning Coffee. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different than the other episodes. My fiance Danielle and I do this word association game every time we go for a walk, or not every time, but often. And so the idea is that we kind of start with a word, and I pose a word to her, and then she'll pose a word to me, and we just continue to kind of expand upon the definition of what it means to us and what it looks like and how it shows up in our lives. Sometimes we go to the etymology of the word, and then oftentimes we just continue kind of go our own direction with it. And I find it really interesting because oftentimes I've found anyway when we play this game that I'll leave that walk with like a really different or better understanding of something. And so my hope was today that we could play a Christmas edition of the word association game and just see where I go, see what we're able to sort of unlock and unearth based on our own understandings. And of course, Danielle always brings the depth psychology sort of lens to the topics that we talk about, and then I'll bring the religious, theological, and sometimes psychological lens. And so we'll just see where this ends up going. Danielle, thanks for joining me.
Thanks. I'm really excited to have this festive show with you.
Cool. So we're going to start with the word joy. And I would love to start with you answering that question.
So, joy. So usually when we play this game, I take a minute to pause. Maybe you can insert some music in here, some Jeopardy music. But joy to me means this just high energy, pleasant state of being where everything feels aligned. Like it feels right in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm coming up with.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we're in a place where, I don't know, I think it's probably pretty common. I definitely struggle with it, which is actually allowing myself to feel the emotion of joy. Like allowing myself to feel so in alignment with what I'm doing. Like normally I have to have something that I hate myself for or something that I'm like beating myself up about. Or so I find that joy in today's day and age is actually like pretty rare. I don't know if you've seen that with like clients and people that you work with as well, but I just find it's like really difficult to allow ourselves to feel joy in the first place.
Yeah, Brené Brown has this lovely quote about that we can't selectively numb our emotions. Mm. And that when we numb our negative emotions, so really like, you know, like the ones that are hard to process, like sadness and fear and all of these really big energy emotions, oftentimes we end up numbing joy too. And so I've found that that definitely has been true in my life. It's like to the degree that I can feel to the depths of my sadness is to the degree that I can feel joy, because they sit in the same place, you know, like,
right.
So yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I think it's kind of like I made this realization years ago actually in myself, and I didn't even have much depth to me. I was like really denying, like you see, you can't selectively numb. And so if you numb some things, you don't have the ability to feel. And one of the things I notice is like you go through a breakup or something and then you put walls up, right? You don't let people in. Unfortunately, what happens is you're also like not letting other people see you. And so whatever it is that hurt you, that caused you to put your walls up, can't be healed unless, of course, you get access to belonging, acceptance, and love, which can't happen when your walls are up. And so the side effect of that is that not only do you not let people in, but you don't get to experience the redemptive qualities of falling in love with somebody yourself. And so it's kind of that same idea. It's like the world we try to keep out, we end up keeping ourselves from, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's typically kind of the crappy feedback loop of not feeling your emotions and processing them. And that's why I think that it's probably the most important thing that you could do in the world, so that you can feel joy all the time, not just on Christmas time.
Right. Yeah. And
because it is Christmas time and that's why we're doing this, one of the things that came up for me as a theme in this week when I was thinking about the tradition of Christmas and this time of year is that we have an opportunity to like pull our head out from the rest of our life and just take a breath and like reflect and also think about going forward. It's like you have all the New Year's traditions and stuff. So it's like a moment where you have a space in your year. I knew in the military, like life kind of shut down, like really, unless you were deployed, like you kind of didn't work very much from Thanksgiving to New Year's. And a lot of corporations are similar. And now a lot of people aren't working anyway. And so we're just in this place where you like can sort of take a break from all of the things that you're constantly doing, which you might not even realize actually do sap your joy. Mm-hmm. There's an idea in Buddhism that when you quit doing what you're doing, like when you actually don't have any judgment or clinging or expectation or things about the moment that you're in, the natural state of our existence is something akin to joy. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, you know, something that I've been thinking about in my contemplative practice this week, but like, is it possible for us to just take a break and experience the joy that kind of is our birthright?
Well, I think also a big thing with my work that I do with my clients is teaching them to have enough space in their being to acknowledge that maybe they're feeling sad, but also they can feel joy at the same time too. And like, it's not just you feel one thing and that's all of who you are. Like, you can feel this and this. And so creating more space for joy, I think, is a practice and a skill. And I think that sometimes that just starts with you. You know, I think a lot of work that people have to do is create celebration for themselves in the times that they do feel joyful. And so a lot of times, like, I was super guilty of this, where I would feel super, like, I would feel so much joy, and then I would go and I would tell somebody about it and they wouldn't feel joy like I would feel joy, and it really ruined my joy. And that in itself was me not celebrating the fact of my actual, like, really not acknowledging my own joy, invalidating my own joy. So I think that that's another thing, is just like really allowing yourself to have it, validating its existence, celebrating it being there. And I think that I think it's a skill.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point there too, which is that it can exist, it can coexist with other emotions, unlike happiness or some of the things that we hope for in our lives. Joy is it's a bit more all-encompassing in that you can exist. You can also be devastated.
Yeah, you guys should definitely watch Inside Out, because I think that is the best encapsulation of joy and sadness being together.
Yeah. Yeah, like, that's true. That movie like personifies the internal psychic experience of growing up pretty well.
Yeah.
Cool. So normally when we play this game, we go back and forth, and like, you hit me with a word, you want to hit me with the next?
Or? Yeah. So our next word is peace.
So peace is interesting in that I do not believe that, I don't think we'll ever have anything even akin or close to peace on earth until people know peace in their heart. Like, truly, I think that what's happening in our world is that people don't know how to deal with what's going on in their internal world, and they're projecting that onto everybody that they see and onto like everybody they disagree with and onto just the exterior world around them. And I think that a way you could figure out if you think this is true or not is to, like, whenever you say anything to anybody else about anything, just say it to yourself first and just see if it's true. Like, hold space. Don't get reactive, but just wait for a minute. I know there were a lot of times in my life where I feel like I used to fall into habits of talking a lot of shit about people, and I try not to. If I'm like even saying anything negative about someone, I try to catch myself, because it's like such a toxic trait and habit. But what I noticed is one of the ways I started reversing that is when I would start talking about somebody else, I would
actually, like, there would be like another voice in my head that would say it about me, that would like ask if it was about me. And then like, almost every time, if I sat with that for more than 5 minutes, I would realize like, oh man, this is about me. And I think it's not that, you know, my internal landscape is getting more peaceful the more I'm sitting with that. At first, it's like more hell. Like, it's kind of like more turmoil, and it doesn't get better, which is why I think people have such a difficult time accepting the idea that peace is something that you have to cultivate within yourself. But I heard on a lecture the other day, someone say, you know, like, it's like kind of when you're with a holy man and, you know, pastor, priest, whatever, someone that's like truly in touch with the source, you know, and your faith is increased just for having been around them. It's like a peaceful experience just to be near them. And I always, when I like meet anyone that professes to like be a pastor or somebody, I do notice their energy, and I try to see like what kind of person does it seem like this person really is. Mm-hmm. But I think that if enough individual people could start working through those things on their own and cultivating that sense of peace, that I do believe that it would be somewhat contagious. And the reason I think that is because if you go to one of these people I'm talking about, like a pastor or somebody, and you project your shit onto them, like someone that's really worked through their stuff, pastor might not even be a good idea, but like someone that's really worked through their stuff, it's like throwing, I heard it, it's like throwing a rock in a pit with no bottom. Like, it never resonates, it never hits anywhere, it never lands, it never touches. And I think
they call that a hook for a projection.
A hook for a projection? Okay. Yeah. So I think that if you're able to work through enough of that, like, and people throw that thing at you, they throw their projections at you, and it doesn't land, it like at least can be a catalyst for someone to like be like, whoa, what just happened there? Because reality didn't just go along with my game.
Mm. Yeah, so I think peace.
Hold that closer.
I think peace in itself is interesting because I think, like you mentioned, not a lot of people are at peace with themselves. And I think we need to normalize that. I think a big part of the reason why people are at war with themselves is they can't validate the fact that they're struggling. And they see other people, quote unquote, seeming peaceful. And they think that that's where they need to be. And I think that a lot of peace in my life has actually just come from the acceptance of everything might not be okay right now, and that's okay.
And that's okay.
Yeah, and I think that, like I said, I think the war within is often started because we can't accept that reality of what we're experiencing. Because a lot of people, I think a lot of people grew up in environments where it was not peaceful. So relearning what it feels like to be at peace is going to be a struggle. And, like, that's okay, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, the people who have been through that deserve, you know, credit for trying. And so I think that whatever your reality is, I think the peace comes from actual acceptance of it.
Yeah, totally.
So, yeah.
Cool. So your word is ghost. We've on this podcast on Monday, I did an episode about Charles Dickens and the whole element of ghost stories being tied to Christmas, which is why this word landed on our list.
Okay, ghost. So I think if I can bring it forward, the ghost is the formless potential of a past experience moving through the present moment.
Okay, so let's break that down.
Okay.
I can barely grasp what you're talking about. But the idea of formless potential from a past experience moving through the present moment.
Yeah.
So let's unpack that. So like what is
So any past experience, like what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that ghosts typically have this like negative connotation to them, right? But just like in the Christmas story, there were different ghosts with different purposes.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, okay, so it's a formless potential, meaning there's no form to it, but there's a potential of something, whether that be good or bad, I think is the perception of the person who's experiencing the quote-unquote ghost. So I think it's interesting because, you know, some people see ghosts, some people hear ghosts, some people feel ghosts. So, you know, I think in a lot of like movies and stories and stuff, ghosts are perceived through image, right? But I think it can be sensed in many different ways. So I don't want to say image, but I think that it's within whatever it is, an image, a feeling, a voice, something, it's carrying with it a message from the past. And whatever that message is could be like I said, good or bad.
Yeah, it's interesting because we would probably think bad, right? But the Holy Ghost is a thing, like that, you know. So I like the idea that you're saying it could really go either way. And if you think about A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens, like those, though there's like something terrifying about them in the original, and like the original sense of them was to be terrifying, was to scare the living shit out of this guy. Mm-hmm. Let's scare the hell out of him, literally, actually. But what's interesting is that they were overwhelmingly positive in the final analysis.
Yeah, and I think that's like why I say potential. Because it's like, I think that's how I personally study the unconscious, where it is kind of like this invisible potential that exists within your being, and you don't really know if it's good or bad, but it's something that gives you messages from, it feels like, you know, times that have happened before you, the divine, like past versions of yourself. Like, so I think that there's so much in common with the word ghost and how I view the unconscious. And I think it's because it's like the formless part of it. Because it's not like, you know, there's a lot of like shows and stuff that try to like capture ghosts and stuff, but I don't necessarily know if that's the purpose. You know, I don't know if it's the purpose to like scientifically capture a ghost. I think the point of it is to be beyond human understanding. But like at a certain level, I think we do understand.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting because that motif appears all over too. Like it's in the Bible a bunch. Like ghosts are trying, like spirits and stuff are trying to like send messages to people. There's like one really interesting one at the very beginning of the Hebrew Bible where this guy basically lives a terrible life, and he has to watch his family basically making the same decisions and going to the same place that he is, and he's like trying to like send a message. And it like basically like his hell is watching his family live the legacy that he left. So yeah, it's interesting how that motif does appear all over the place.
Yeah, and I think it, like I said, if you think about it as, you know, there's like the Buddhist principle of the hungry ghost, right? And like, so we, and you talk about like spirit in the Bible, so it's like ghosts and spirits and things like that. I think there are things in our unconscious that haunt us all the time. And I think it's our relationship to it that truly changes the whole potential, whether it's good or bad. Because oftentimes if we're like, feel like we're being haunted by a ghost and we think it's bad, then it doubles down and it becomes worse.
Right.
And if we start to like build a relationship of understanding, I think that's, you know, I think that some people have ghost story. I have my own like ghost story, but I think the biggest thing is like it feeds on fear and it feeds on darkness if it's a quote unquote bad thing. But if the relationship to it changes, I think that will also change too.
Totally.
Yeah. Good. Okay. So the next word is Emmanuel.
So I don't know why is that funny. That's a Christmas word.
Because it's spelled wrong.
Oh, gotcha.
No, with the 1M. Emmanuel. No.
So look, they're listening to this show. So like, why are you trying to roast me on spelling that they can't see? Just, geez. Okay. So in the Bible, obviously when they're like talking about Jesus being born, they call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. And so this is interesting because I'm going to do more content on this, and I'm like still trying to understand a lot of obviously concepts, and it's always hard when you talk about something that you're not like fully apprehending. But one thing I realized this year is like, for me, I've had these experiences like on psychedelics and just different sort of experiences of my own conscious experience that have been altered in some way, and I've gotten a lot out of it. Like, I've gotten a lot out of having these sort of spiritual experiences, and it's made me, it hasn't made me do anything, but I have naturally had an inclination to want to chase those kind of experiences. And what happens is you end up in this really, this place where you're like disavowing your life and you're like trying to live a disembodied spiritual experience. And one of the things that I'm realizing in my life anyway is that if your spiritual path, if your spiritual life, it cannot be lived in your actual life, it's useless. And I just don't think we're here to escape our lives, though I, you know, for most of my life would have rathered. I just don't think, as I really sit with this stuff, I just don't think that's why we're here. And even growing up, you know, I was in a church that like really talked a lot about how like I can't wait till we're just saved from this like garbage human experience, and we'd sang a song called I'll Fly Away, and like the whole thing just sort of puts your own life in a light that is pretty terrible and unhelpful. And so the idea that I love studying comparative religion because I think you can learn so much about people by understanding the religions that are at the bottom of the culture that they come out of. And the one thing that's different about the Christian religion specifically is that God isn't up and out. He actually came down and died, right? And so that's a completely different idea than a lot of the ways that other religions will personify like having understandings of God and stuff. And so even Krishna, for example, in the Hindu religion is the personification of the God Most High who comes down on earth, but he lives a very spiritual life and doesn't go through the struggle of that ends up characterizing Jesus's life essentially. And so I just think that there's something interesting about this idea that like, not only did God say, escape your life and come to me, was actually like a different narrative, which is like, I'll come to you and I'll suffer like you're suffering. And I wrote a paper this semester on the Garden of Gethsemane when he's like sort of praying and he's like, he's anguishing so hard that he's sweating blood. And he's just thinking about the future that's ahead of him, which is going to be the most painful thing imaginable. And he goes to his friends and he's like, you know, will you just stay awake with me? And they keep falling asleep. And like, I think that what's happening there is like, he's abandoned like by everybody. Like, not only does nobody know, because he, in the story, you got to imagine, we're reading it from the end. Mm-hmm. But the story is that he's in this place where he's the only one that knows what's happening to him. He's the only one that knows he's about to be delivered and executed as an enemy of the state. And so not only, imagine when you're holding the knowledge of something so terrible, it feels like you're going to explode because of it. And there's not only is there nobody there to know about it, there's not even anybody to care. Like, they're sleeping. And I just think that that idea of that can be really transformative if you can hold space for how that should influence your spiritual experience in life.
So what was the initial meaning of it, did you say?
God with us.
God with us.
Okay. Yeah, so when he's born, when Jesus is born in the story that gets retold about the nativity scene and stuff that you'd see on Christmas, they say, and he was called Emmanuel, which means God with us.
Okay, so I'll keep that, I'll kind of put that in a container in the back of my mind and hold on to it. But just talking about what you're just talking about, when people are falling asleep from a depth perspective, I find that interesting because I find that symbolic of, you know, potentially when part of you is being confronted by something bigger than yourself, a big part of us wants to fall asleep or quote unquote be unconscious. And it's very hard to keep that like consciousness, the awakeness, the vitality towards something bigger than yourself when it's hard. And so that's how I would perceive that from a symbolic lens.
Yeah.
But okay, so God within with us.
God with us, yeah.
God with us.
Okay, so final word. I wanted to keep this about 30 minutes. We're at about 26 now, so I think we'll be all right. Final word is light. Okay. And I'm excited for you to have this one because I kind of did an exposition on light in one of the episodes.
Oh, okay. This is a hard one. Okay, so this is a hard one. You know, you could probably look at this from, like, so many different perspectives. Like, you could... Do you mean light as a... Like, light being, like, Christmas lights or...
Yeah, light. I just mean it as the word, but yeah, I mean, you can go anywhere with it. And that's one of the things about light is that it shines in a 360-degree arc, and so wherever you are, you can actually, you can navigate toward it.
Yeah, so whenever I think light, I just kind of automatically think consciousness. That's kind of where my mind associates light with.
So can you define that word, consciousness?
Like an actual definition?
Yeah, or just what do you mean? Like awareness? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I guess awareness is a good way to put it. But I think it's anything from our... Yeah, it would have to be awareness. Because, you know, I think you're... Yeah, well, I don't know, because like your ego can be aware but also kind of partially in unconsciousness too. So I'm not going to say it's ego. Awareness is probably a better word.
Okay.
To describe it. So, yeah, I think that when I think light, I think consciousness. And I think that because there's like... When I think consciousness, too, I also think of potential, and I think darkness is potential, too. So it's very interesting. I'm probably circling in this, but because I think, like, the potential of what your awareness can do is so important. And I also think that when I think of light, it does have this like spiritual connotation to it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
And I think that has to do with a level of consciousness or a relationship to spiritual something. But also the more I kind of develop my own spiritual practice, I'm not going to say it's like witchy or like dark arts in any way, but I do feel like there is an inherent like down and in consciousness that's soul. And I think that like spirit is a little bit more the light. I don't know if this makes any sense.
Not really, but I mean, I kind of get what you're saying. So the idea for you for spirituality is that your spirituality has to encompass darkness in it. Your awareness has to encompass the darkness.
Yeah, I think that the way I'm starting to like view existence as a human is, I think I've always felt this way, but now I think I actually have like a framework to understand it. But it is from this very holistic lens, mm-hmm. a very inclusive lens, where it's not just this looking towards the light and like all the good and all the up, like ascension type of stuff. I think a lot of it now is like really finding points that serve as like where I can, the human in me can be on the spectrum of those poles. So like we have a light and we have a dark, and I'm the human that's like navigating the poles.
Yeah, I think what's interesting, because I look at more of a cultural evolution lens, and I think what's fascinating is that darkness element was actually really incorporated in religion. And if you ever go to like for people that are Catholic, there's a lot of like Gothic elements, and like the darkness was really integrated into their ceremony and everything. But when the Protestant Reformation happened and we split, and people here that have been raised Protestant, like there isn't a huge acknowledgement in what's dark about the world and what's dark about ourselves. And it becomes difficult to navigate because you're disavowing it your whole life, but yet you are it. And like one of the reasons that PTSD is so prevalent is because people see, they really come to reconcile and come to terms with how like evil they can be. Like and they've spent their entire life disavowing this darkness. And then it's like this really weird place, because it saved your life in some elements, right? You became this beast and it saved your life. And at the same time, you've spent your whole life disavowing it. And so I think I see what you're saying by just the idea that our spiritual practice, our practice in general, just has to have a holistic element to it so that we can navigate all that we actually are. Because if you disavow the darkness, it doesn't make you any less dark.
Yeah, and I think that there's something to be said there, what you mentioned, because I just wrote a paper about kind of how rationalism and science and then Jungian psychology, how the comparison of those. And at the end of the paper, I wrote something about, you know, like healing doesn't happen when an individual touches darkness, malevolence, and then someone rationalizes it for him.
Right.
Like you can't heal from that. So you can't just shine light on it. You can't just rationally fix something or heal something with rationalism. That's not what light is. And I think that when you say about how like just because there's not light present doesn't mean the potential for light isn't there. So that's why I think that like healing something like PTSD has to encapsulate the whole. Because healing can't happen from just one side. It has to happen from all sides. And I think that there's a level of darkness that is involved that needs to be acknowledged and accepted and not rationalized away, if that makes sense.
Totally. I mean, I don't know how Christmas this episode was, but there were Christmas words. So, yeah. Danielle, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, babe. We'll be right back.